And now for a reading from the new president at Starking School for the Ministry, which is the Unitarian Universalist Seminary in Berkeley, California. Rose was a longtime minister at Fourth Universalist in New York. Her husband died some time ago, but this was written before he passed on. The title of it is called Fears. He phones me more than an hour ago to say he was on his way home. But I have yet to hear the scrape of the iron gate, the rattling keys. So I worry. Most married women fret about a tardy husband. Young black women like myself worry more. For most people in New York, the urban boogeyman is a young black man in sneakers. But we live in Central Harlem, where every young man is a black man and wears sneakers. So we learn to look into the eyes of our young males and discern the difference between youthful bravado and the true dangers of the streets. No, I have other fears. I fear white men in police uniforms, white teenagers driving by, thin, panicking, middle-aged white men on the subway. Most of all, I fear that their path and my husband's will cross one night as he makes his way home. I fear that some white person will look at him and see only their own nightmare, another black man in sneakers. But he's also a writer, an amateur cyclist, a lousy basketball player, his parents' son, my life's companion. When I peek out the window, the visions in my head are those of blind white panic at my husband's black presence. Once upon a time, I was vaguely ashamed of my paranoia about his safety in the world outside our home. After all, he's a grown man, but he's a grown black man on the streets alone. I am reminded over and over how dangerous white people can be, how their fears are still a hazard to our health. When white people are ruled by their fears of everything black, every black man is a rapist, even a murderer. Tell you, I have spent all week pondering this sermon and what I would say to you. And if many of you are like me, I spent most of my week going to protests, praying, being with people who needed support. I had the privilege of sitting with some children who are from Ferguson and talking about their fears. And in almost equal measure, I found myself debating with liberal whites, conservative whites, members of my own family who are white and mixed race, and defending the reality, the real lived experience of millions of black Americans and people from other countries. And I'll tell you, the conversation's hard, right? It's hard to talk about this. It's hard to find the words to say this is why this is happening. And part of why it is hard is because the system in which we were born into has made it as hard as possible to have language, to have the language to talk about what's going on, to have the experience in having healthy communications, having the experience of making real social change. The only way we have had significant social change around race in this country is either by executive order from a president, be it Abraham Lincoln or Barack Obama, or through an order from the Supreme Court and the force of the National Guard. And knowing that that is the case, how do we affect change? How do we affect change? I must say I'm overwhelmed. Emotionally, mentally, physically, It's been hard to sleep this week, in no small part because my lungs have turned against me. The smell of embers from Ferguson floating into Florissant. Allergies to someone's rage. And what's sad is I honestly don't believe those fires had anything to do with the protests, had anything to do with the topic of race. In fact, the fact that it was mostly national chains who were burned tells me there's probably some anarchist out there really proud of themselves for trying to damage the system and take the conversation away from what it needs to be on, which is children and young adults and everyday human beings being killed because maybe they have some cigars in their pocket or a plastic gun. I am stuck with the reality that no matter what it comes down to, what happened in Ferguson was bound to happen. There is nothing that Officer Wilson or Michael Brown could have done to prevent that moment in many ways. I don't blame Officer Wilson specifically because while he is ultimately responsible for his actions, it is the system in which he was born that made it possible for him to see Michael Brown as somebody who was inherently violent and dangerous and worthy of being killed. Made it possible for him to shoot a young man 6 times before finally putting a shot in his head that killed him. Made it possible for all of this to happen. One of the most common arguments I hear this week is, well, you know, race isn't real, right? So why are we doing all of this? Oh boy, you're right. There is no scientific basis for race, but race is real. Why is it real? Because we made it. We as a society made it real. And now that it is in our hands to undo it, to recognize it, to find a path through. It is on us that the Supreme Court in the 1900s said, these are the people who are less than, and these are the people who are white. It was the Supreme Court who said, okay, you Irish and you Italians, yeah, we'll let you in the thing so you can stop fighting with us. But you people from India, you people with dark skin, you will forever be the other. And no law from the civil rights movement can undo that reality. We created race in this country by law, by word and deed, over and over again. In fact, some of the laws we live this day are over 500 years old, based on papal bulls issued by the Catholic Church that are used as the basis for stealing Native American lands for corporate use today. Race is very real. We have to deal with the realities. We have to deal with what's true. Not what we wish was or what we imagine was or what society has told us, but what is true. One of my favorite authors on the topic of race is named Lillian Smith. She wrote a book called Killers of the Dream. Yeah, she's good. She wrote this in 1948 in South Carolina, a white woman saying race is real and it's our problem. And she wrote this, and I think it describes well the system in which we were born in. She writes, something was wrong with a world that tells you that love is good and people are important, and then forces you to deny love and to humiliate people. I knew, though I would not for years confess it aloud, that in trying to shut the Negro race away from us, we have shut ourselves away from so many good, creative, honest, deeply human things in life. I began to understand slowly at first, but more clearly as the years passed, that the warped, distorted frame we have put around every Negro child from birth is around every white child also. Each is on a different side of the frame, but each is pinioned there. And I knew that what cruelly shapes and cripples the personality of one is as cruelly shaping and crippling the personality of the other. I began to see that though we may, as we acquire new knowledge, live through the new experiences, examine old memories, gain the strength to tear the frame from us. Yet we are stunted and warped, and in our lifetime cannot grow straight again, any more than it can a tree put in a steel-like twisting frame when young, grow tall and straight when the frame is torn away in maturity. In other words, it is really hard to unlearn what we have been taught. And to think that we will end racism in our lifetimes is a fool's errand. We will not. Any more than the people 50 years ago did not end racism through their efforts. And it is not to say that there haven't been improvements. There have. It isn't to say that having an African-American president isn't a step in the right direction. It is. And yet we have to recognize that while we have an African-American president, we have an African-American president who can be disrupted by Congress without a word, who can be told to go back to Africa, even though that's not where he's from, can be routinely again and again told racist things. And yet somehow our society would like to believe that he is evidence that racism has ended. I think what we need to know is that definition of race is not what we always thought it was. Race is not just the KKK rolling into town and lynching another young person. Racism isn't just that experience of walking down the street and hearing someone shout the N-word. Racism isn't just overt. It is covert. It is insidious. It is woven into every aspect of our lives, the systems in which we were born, the prisons in which we exist today. It's amazing to me to know that just in the 1970s, there were only 375,000 people in U.S. prisons. Today, there are more than 2 million, and most of them are African American. It is interesting to know that African Americans deal and use drugs at almost exactly the same rate as white Americans, and yet are arrested far more frequently when white folks are sent to treatment far more frequently. It is worth noting that most African Americans get the longest possible sentence, and white folks tend to get the least. And what is even more amazing to me is this new school-to-prison pipeline in which children are thrown into juvenile hall at a very young age, in a place where they learn how to commit crime, they learn that the system is against them and that no one's got their back. If I had been in school in this day and age, there are a number of things that might have gotten me arrested by a police officer. And that is true for every person here. Whether it's being late to school or talking back to a teacher, there are any number of things that children do that get them arrested and sent to juvenile hall, even when they're in elementary school. And the result is that they learn how to live a certain kind of life, and prison becomes the thing that's most comforting, the place that they know. In the medical world, we still have a long way to go. Those of you who are aware of the Tuskegee research that occurred in the earlier part of the 20th century, in which young black men were given syphilis, and that syphilis was left to run its course even after we had a cure, to see how it would play out. And time again, black bodies have been used for scientific research, have been tied down, used as examples, have been sterilized, have been subsumed. So much so that there is almost no trust in the medical system by the African American community even to this day. The words of African American womanist ethicist Emily M. Towns. She puts it this way: we need to offer a lament to the world, to the lives of black people. And by putting their suffering into the form of a lament of people of Judah, they had to acknowledge that there was a crisis in their midst. And this fuels much of the pains and marks of suffering. By putting words to their suffering, the community could move to a pain or pains that could be named, and then from that addressed. Lament is, in a word, formful. When done as a communal lament, it helps the community to see the crisis as bearable and manageable in community. And so she goes on through her book to describe the medical experience of African Americans and the systemic violence against them, and offers a lament, putting words to what is true for their experience. And so we have to decide what's next. What are we lamenting this week? What are we lamenting as we walk in the streets? What are we lamenting as we lie on the ground and close the mall for a day? What are we doing when we stop subway stations from moving? What do we do when we lament through action? Because clearly, words have not been enough. Before I go on to what we do, I want to take a moment and talk about the violence this week. I was actually speaking with Reverend Kleber on Friday about the memorial, and he was asking about the events here. His heart's here because he lived here for so long. And he, like me, had been dealing with some comments about this violence. And he said, you know, my thing is, this violence is normal, right? This happens anytime there's protest. It's not the protesters, it's people who take advantage of it. It's like, exactly right. Time and again, whether it's a World Health Organization protest or it is a protest against the establishment, there are people out there who take advantage of the situation to cause trouble. What is really sad in my mind this week is that our St. Louis Metro Police Department and National Guard had to know this was going to happen. It's happened every time this kind of thing has occurred. And yet, they stood and protected the police station. And they weren't in the streets. They didn't protect the businesses. They weren't at the site where Michael Brown was killed. They weren't anywhere else in the city but on their territory. And then the next day, as I was driving home from one of the protests, there was the National Guard in the parking lot where all those cars were burnt. And I thought, a lot of good you're doing to us today. There they were in front of those stores that had already been burned and destroyed. And my thought was, where were you yesterday? And that is part of that system of injustice, focused on protecting the world from the black people who were gathered in front of their building and not protecting the black people from those who were truly violent in their town. That is systemic violence. So yes, there was violence this week, and I don't condone it. I don't think anybody who's been working on this condones that kind of violence. But we are not going to stop talking just because a few people don't know how to handle themselves. So what's next? Us, prophethood of all believers. The words of James Luther Adams, he says that Unitarian Universalists are a priesthood of all believers. That means we are all ministers. We are all agents in this world. We are all the ones called to do and be and live our values. But he said, in addition to that priesthood, that ability to create our own theology and determine our own path, we are also a prophethood of all believers. We are the ones, because we have that morality and that compass and that sense of direction, that it is not enough to say it and to know it. We must do. We must be prophets. We must speak out. I appreciated a couple of letters this week from some of you who said, you know, Sunshine, I can't go protest, but I did this one thing. And all I could say was, good job. All you can do is the one thing that you can do. Tuesday, I was out. I did a whole bunch of stuff. Come Wednesday, I was so burned out from staying up all night looking at video footage and doing the posts that I've been doing on Facebook and all that, that I needed a day off. You don't have to be in the streets every day. the first thing you can do is listen. The number one thing that I think is holding us back in these weeks, in these days of violence, and has for decades and centuries, is the inability to listen to someone and let their experience be true. An African American goes on TV and says that this is systemic violence, that this is against me, and your first thought is, well, what about this and this and this? You're not listening. You've already made your opinion. We need to listen first, not with our own judgment, with our own awareness. We need to listen knowing that we cannot know that person's experience. And we need to help our society do the same. As I so often say, can you imagine if our politicians learned to listen in that way? If our leaders learned to listen in that way? If our police learned to listen in that way? Listening, not assuming that you are right or that there's something off about their experience, but letting that truth just be true. The second thing is to learn the history. Go out and buy the people's history of the United States. Go out and buy resources or go to workshops. Attend the Races, the Power of Illusion training. Read Dear White People. Go see the movie Dear White People. It will rustle you, but I promise you it will be a good experience. Next month we'll be showing Fruitvale Station, which is about the murder of Oscar Grant by a BART police station police officer. Go out and learn about experiences that are not your own, for our lives are not ours alone. Third thing you need to do is determine, are you needing to lead or follow in this situation? What I know is, as much as I may be in a leadership role with you, when I am on the streets, I am a witness and I am a follower, because I am not black. Just as I would hope every African American person who joins in a protest for indigenous peoples would let me lead, because that's my fight. Or for transgender people, or for any community. Know, should you lead or should you follow? Where does your power lie? And if you are not an African American, you are not a leader in this struggle, you are an ally. And you can affect serious change just by being present. Why did I get out of my car and go to that protest on Tuesday? Because I thought a person who appears white with a clergy collar might help bring some peace. Don't know if it did or didn't, but it was what I could do in that moment. What can you do? And the final thing is to support the effort, to support the community. If you have time, go lie down on the street or on the sidewalk or in the mall. Or go to the phone center that's offering jail support to those who've been arrested. Or lead a conversation about what is happening. Or call your representatives. Do something that helps affect change and end racism in our world. And so I close today with this bit of wisdom. It is hard. Yes. And we are enough to face the struggles before us. It is hard, yes. But the world has been transformed and continues to be. The only evidence I need is the fact that marriage is now legal in Mississippi. Change comes, no matter how slowly. And all we have to do is say yes when we are called. It's tough. Just as it is to go from thinking about all the struggles that we face to singing a song like The Spirit Says Do and dancing and smiling while we do it. Because there is struggle, yes, but there is joy. And we do this because we fight for that joy, for that love, and for that beauty. Not just for our loved ones, but for all people in the world. So may you go forth in this day offering your presence, your witness, your loving kindness. May you heal the world and its wounds, one stitch at a time. May it be so.